Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. We've got a good hour, dynamic, filled with all kinds of information for you. And before we go to our very special guest today, I want to be sure that I give out our toll-free numbers, because later on in the program, the phone lines are going to be open for you to call in if you so desire. Here are our toll-free telephone numbers in the U.S., 877-876-5227. In Canada, 888-810-8322. And for anyone else that would like to call through on the direct line, it's 530-876-9146. So again, those lines will be open to you in the latter part of the show. Actors, actresses, we're always fascinated with them. They're bigger than life on screen. But what we really like to know about is, what did it take to make them that strong presence? What is it in their life that makes them so uniquely special that they are in this wonderful world of imagination called the motion picture industry, and maybe they're actors and actresses on stage? Whatever it is they're involved with, they have a magic. Al Pacino is one of those people. In fact, when I was flying up to Fairbanks this morning, I found that I had a wonderful conversation with someone who is a very big fan of his, and we are going to be talking to two people. They have a very special story to tell. They have a book, When I Knew Al. The picture of Al Pacino on the cover is just very dynamic, very powerful. This is the untold story of Al Pacino. My guests are David Sheldon and Joan McCall. Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show.
Thank you, Donna. It's a great pleasure to join you on the show.
Well,
hi,
I'm
Donna.
So...
This is Joan.
Oh, hi, Joan. Okay. And I'm so glad you're with us, too. So we've got both of them. This is really great.
Yes.
Now, this book is very different in the sense that it's not a typical book like someone would expect to read about the movie stars, etc. This came about because of a man by the name of Ed DeLeo. Now, I want my audience to know a little bit about you, David, and also you, Joan. David, you are a noted Hollywood screenwriter. You're a producer and director. You're widely recognized for your work in motion pictures and television. You made a film called Grizzly, and it's still one of the top-grossing independent films of all time. Joan, you are a screenwriter, and you're one busy lady. You're called a script doctor. That's the first time I ever heard that terminology. A script doctor. That's a real visual. And a director. You have done more than 50 screenplays. You've got your own story to write about. You also have been an actress. You've starred in Broadway. You've been in national Broadway tours and in several Hollywood motion pictures. How did the two of you ever get together and decide to write this story about Al Pacino? And Ed DeLeo, he's such an interesting man. What brought the two of you together?
It's quite a fascinating story. The writing of the book really wasn't our idea. Ed DeLeo came to us. We had known Ed for a number of years. He was an unemployed actor that came to us looking for work, looking for jobs in our movies. And he told us that he was a good friend of Al Pacino's and asked us if we would be interested in writing a book about Al Pacino. And we were not terribly enthusiastic about writing just a straight biography, because straight biographies are a dime a dozen. But we told him that we would be interested in writing a parallel story about his life as well as Al Pacino's, because it intrigued us. Why did these two gentlemen who were close friends for over 40 years, they started out together, they studied acting together at the Herbert Berghoff Studio in New York in 1958. One of them became a superstar, the other one became a total failure. Why did this happen? This really intrigued us. What makes success? What did Pacino have that made him such a superstar? And where did Ed DeLeo fail? What did he not do that caused him to lose everything? And he did lose everything. And that impelled us to write this book.
I want to quote John Steinbeck. In fact, it's Act One of your book, and for those of you that are just tuning in, the book we're talking about is titled When I Knew Al. It's the untold story of Al Pacino, as told by Ed DeLeo, who knew him quite well. Man, unlike any other thing, organic or inorganic in the universe, grows beyond his work, walks up the stairs of his concepts, emerges ahead of his accomplishments. John Steinbeck, that's from The Grapes of Wrath. That's a very powerful quote.
Yes, it is.
The story you tell of these two men, as you said, the parallel, is so fascinating. You have also in your book a foreword written by Patty Barham, who is a journalist and talk show host and also a best-selling author. The very first sentence in that foreword consists of six words. Success is a matter of consciousness.
Yes.
Six words. The very first sentence. Is that what you really wanted to express in this book? Before we get into the details about Al and Ed, did Patty get right to the kernel of an issue?
I think Patty got right to the kernel, because success is to us, as metaphysicians, a matter of consciousness. And by consciousness, we mean the makeup of our mind, so to speak, all the entirety of our mind, what we believe about ourselves, what we know about ourselves, what we've been told about ourselves, what we think we can do or what we think we can't do with our consciousness. So, of course, if we're successful, then we have to believe that we can be, and then we have to believe that the so-called breaks are available to us. I believe, and I think David does too, that we create our breaks by our focus and by our belief in ourselves and our abilities.
Now, Patty also has that feeling, because
she
feels that we are living in a shortcut society, and that so many people don't want to really maintain their focus. They want to go with the high road rather than doing what's required to reach those goals.
That's right.
And I think she states it so well, and she says about Al that he's the kind of actor who is willing to go all the way to the edge. He will do whatever he feels is necessary for the part he is playing. Now, he was that way right from the beginning, wasn't he?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that Al wanted to be a great actor. He didn't want to be a great star. And there's a big difference, isn't there? Because he was willing to do the work that made him the star. I think he didn't think about the stardom. He thought about it really knowing and feeling and fulfilling himself as a great actor, and to know that he was one, rather than just being a star.
And also the statement of there are no lesson plans, there are no formulas. That really is powerful stuff, because you have so many people that go around in life and say A plus B equals W. Believe me, that's the only way to do it. Then you go to somebody else and they say, no, 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 it's Z and Q, and that equals D, and that's the only way to do it. Have you encountered a few people like that?
Yes, of course, but again, as Patty said, it's a matter of consciousness, and every consciousness is unique, so there couldn't be a pattern, could there? There couldn't be one way to do it.
That's right. Now, when did you meet Ed DeLeo? Because he's the one that stimulated this. When did you meet him?
We probably met Ed DeLeo 30 years ago.
Oh, my gracious.
It may be that far back.
They were very young.
Yes, I think Ed DeLeo was in his 40s at the time.
30 years ago? No.
Well, Ed passed on about a year and a half ago, and he was about 73, 74.
Oh, okay.
So he was in his 40s, and, you know, he was an unemployed actor. You know, the whole world was on his shoulders. We could tell from his demeanor that he had a victim complex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he lived thinking that, you know, he's always going to be rejected. Nothing works for him. You know, this was his mindset. This is what he was impressing his consciousness with. You know, it's a fact that over 90% of people, before they pass on, like on their deathbeds, they say, you know, if only I had been a little bolder, if only I had done this, if only I had made better choices. If only I had taken this road instead of that road. So many people let their lives pass them by without doing what they know is the right thing to do. Now, Al Pacino didn't do that. Al, every step of the way, knew exactly what he needed to do. He wasn't always successful because there was competition in the business, but it never deterred him.
But he was always taking the risk. He was stepping off into the unknown all the time.
Now, you bring out something that I feel is very, very significant, and that is that he had such a passion for being an actor and wanting to be an outstanding actor.
Yes.
That if he went hungry, he didn't care.
Right.
That was his passion. He was going to stick his neck out. He really was going to do it. Now, there are thousands upon thousands of people that are involved in this entertainment industry that are never, ever going to see their name in lights.
That's right.
And they are very disappointed. Let's go into a little bit of Al's background. Now, your book starts out about when Ed first met Al. How old was Al when Ed met him?
Was he 16, 17, 18, something?
Al Pacino was 18 years old, and Ed D'Elia was 9 years older. He was an experienced student. He had been studying at the Herbert Berghoff studio for several years, and Al Pacino was a newcomer. He was brand new in the class, and there was a scene study class for the new actors, and Berghoff invited some of the senior student actors to participate and do scenes with the new actors, and that's how the two of them met. Al Pacino was very green. He was very timid. Berghoff was not particularly impressed with his acting. And Ed DeLeo saw something in him and thought that, you know, this young actor could really go someplace. And he encouraged him and told him that he'd be very happy to spend time with him, doing scenes with him, coaching him. And the two of them came from the Bronx. They both came from the same background. They were practically neighbors. And when they rode the subway home every evening after class, you know, they would talk about acting. They would stay up late at night doing scenes together. And Ed DeLeo literally put Al Pacino on the right path to be a good actor.
Yes, that's what I liked about your book, is that you relayed a story of two people who had very different personalities, Al Pacino and Ed DeLeo. But Ed did not come across in the way that you portray his information in the book. He wasn't a vindictive man at all. He wasn't really petty. He really had a deep-seated appreciation and admiration for this young man that he had the fortune to cross paths with and help in the development of his career in the early part.
That's right. Yes, Ed DeLeo was a very giving person, and unfortunately, that was to his detriment because most of his career was in talking about his friend, Al Pacino. And, you know, because he was so helpful to him in the beginning, he felt that Al Pacino owed him something. You know, so rather than build his own career, he lived in the shadow of the Frankenstein monster that he created.
Amazing. Now let's talk about Al Pacino.
Sure.
He had a pretty rough life.
Oh, yes.
He had a tough life growing up. Tell us about his early life.
He had very close friends who died from drug overdoses. He had a mental problem himself. He was an alcoholic. You know, he was committed at Bellevue for a period of time. He had a very, very difficult life. But he overcame all of the obstacles because he never kept his eye off the prize. You know, his motto was, I think it was Ralph Waldo Emerson who originally said, a man's
reach
should exceed his grasp. Otherwise, what is heaven for?
Mm-hmm.
That quote has been used by Robert Browning, Tennyson, but it originated.
It originated,
I believe, with Emerson.
I think Browning heard that quote when Emerson was in London lecturing, and paraphrased it. We checked it out when we used that because it was ours. We wanted to know the origins of it.
Yeah. But nothing kept Al Pacino down. He just...
And his worst enemies, of course, were himself. He was fighting his own demons, but he conquered them by keeping his focus on what it was he wanted. He wanted that fulfillment. He wanted to be recognized as that great actor that he knew he was. I think he knew that he was a great actor.
Mm-hmm.
He had it in himself.
Well, apparently, one of his high school teachers also felt that he had a tremendous potential, because you state that one of the teachers said to him, "You have the fire of the great Sicilian actors."
That's right. That's
what a powerful motivational statement or motivating statement, I should say, to make to a young person, to plant that seed in their mind. Because when I think of one of his roles, the first time I ever saw Al Pacino was in the movie Serpico. And I was discussing this with someone that I was on the plane with, flying up here to Fairbanks, Alaska, and he said, "Oh, he has such a fire in him."
Did he?
And here, you know, here you've got the quote in the book, and I'm reviewing it again before coming on air, and I'm going, "Yes, there is that fire."
Yes, that's one of my favorite movies too, because I think that fire is burning the brightest in him at that point, and then Dog Day Afternoon. Those parts are just incredible.
Yeah, I think Dog Day Afternoon and his performance in Angels in America, you know, it's like two sides of a coin. You know, the young actor in Dog Day Afternoon, this was fresh Al Pacino doing a wild, wild performance that is the likes of which we've never seen. Even Marlon Brando, couldn't come close to what Al Pacino did in Dog Day Afternoon. And then his performance in Angels in America, I mean, it's the most incredible piece of acting I've ever seen. It's an amazing performance.
Now, Ed had this perception about Al, that he was destined to be successful as an actor. And they developed a friendship, and Al wasn't very open to people when he was younger because he had had a pretty tough life.
Mm-hmm.
And his father had abandoned the family. His mother was a beauty, but had to work very hard. There was a sense of loneliness, and there was also a great sense of frustration and anger, which isn't unusual when you feel like you've been abandoned by someone that you think should be in your life, mm-hmm. should be there. And I was fascinated with the fact that Ed was a strong student of Napoleon Hill.
Yes, he was.
And yet, for all of that, and Napoleon Hill is someone that I have a deep respect for as well, he did not utilize a lot of the things that Napoleon Hill talked about, but he said Al did.
Yeah.
He studied it a lot, but he never embodied it, as we know. He never really made that his consciousness. He didn't operate from that. It was more theory to him than actual reality.
You see, Ed Leo always compromised every step of the way. Instead of sticking 100% to his acting career the way Al Pacino did, you know, sleeping in doorways if he had to, Ed Leo played it safe. And that's why, you know, in the book, we illustrate some of the things that Ed Leo did just to survive, like taking ads in the Village Voice, telling people that he would perform roles.
Their fantasies, right?
Yes. Act out their fantasies, you know, as long as there's nothing kooky, no kinks or no kooks. And, you know, he, like one of the people that answered his ads, they wanted, this man wanted him to dress up as a masked crusader. Perform in Central Park for his little son and his friends. So Ed DeLeo dressed up in a cape and a mask, and he came into Central Park to play the role of a masked crusader, and the father attacked him and beat him up so that he could show his son that he was stronger than the masked.
Oh, boy, such a deal. Gee whiz.
He left without getting paid and got beaten up with the police gang. He had one experience after another that was, you know, for us was very funny, but I'm sure for him at the time it was not funny.
Yeah, especially when you're the Cape Crusader. That's right. Not too funny. Gee whiz. Let's move forward a little bit here. Talk about when Ed arrived in Hollywood.
Yes.
And then Al was in New York. That was in the
60s. Yes.
What went on there? Because here is Ed taking off for New York. He and Al are going in different directions, and Al is in New York, and he's training with Charlie Lawton, who was a very famous actor.
No, this is a different Charlie.
Oh, this is
Lawton.
A different Charlie. Okay.
This is not the Charles Lawton, the famous English actor who's the Hunchback of Notre Dame. This is Charlie Lawton. He, you know, has the same name, but this is a man who Al started studying with a couple of years after Ed DeLeo was coaching Al. And to this day, Al Pacino and Charlie Lawton are very close friends. They've been lifelong friends. And Charlie Lawton has been, he became Al Pacino's mentor. So Ed DeLeo was like Al Pacino's first mentor.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie Lawton became his second and sort of lifelong mentor.
And Al had those people who were with him as mentors and agents and managers from very much permanently. And, of course, Ed was his friend for life, but they were always in touch.
So mm-hmm.
Charlie Lawton then became his coach and manager.
And you see, Al Pacino was a Broadway actor. He was doing shows on Broadway. First, he did a series of off-Broadway shows, and then, you know, he started doing Broadway shows.
He didn't do a movie until he was about 30 years old.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, now, he also got booed by the critics when he tried Shakespeare.
Yes, he did.
Al Pacino. And I cannot, you know, in some roles I think he'd be just fabulous, but for some reason he just didn't have it.
It was his accent, I think, at the time.
Yeah,
I said he was the toast of Broadway, burnt toast.
Right.
That's pretty cruel.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Yeah, he never quite made it in Broadway.
That's got to be discouraging, too, if you want to be a great actor, right? You want to play every good role.
Absolutely. But he said after he had done 70 performances of Richard, that he honestly did not understand a lot of what he was portraying. And after 70 performances, Al Pacino started to get it. And then, once he started getting it, he got more enthusiastic. See, that to me is the mark of someone that is going to be successful, whether their names are ever in light or not.
This is persistence, isn't it? The willingness to stay the course.
Yes.
No matter how rigorous it gets, no matter how negative it might get, because of the goal in mind. That's keeping the focus, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And he didn't get uptight with the critics.
No.
He didn't take it personally. He knew he had to learn something new.
Yeah, and also when he started acting on Broadway, they started comparing him to Dustin Hoffman, who was getting a little known at the same
mm-hmm.
time. And they started calling Al Pacino a second-rate Dustin Hoffman. That haunted him for a few years until he, you know, started doing his movies like The Godfather and Dog Day Afternoon, and people recognized this is a major talent.
Yes, and he's absolutely incredible. Act 3 in your book, and we're talking about the book When I Knew Al, The Untold Story of Al Pacino, as told by Ed DeLeo to David Sheldon and Joan McCall, my guests today. There's a quote here, two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. That's a quote by Robert Frost from The Road Not Taken. Ed was very, very, how can I say this? The way you have expressed this story tells me about a man that in some ways had regrets, but at the very end of your book, this is what he says. Al is the success he is because he could never compromise. And me? I took too many side roads. I tried to play it safe by working too much outside of the acting arena. I thought it was the right thing to do for my family. Somehow along the way, I guess I lost my vision. My great satisfaction in life, though, is my family. If I had to choose between a career and my family, I would choose my family.
Right, yeah. I think that was a little bit of justification from Ed at the time, you know, being, for want of a better phrase, you know, a loser. You know, he was aware of the fact that, you know, he just, you know, wasn't making it, and so he claimed. I never believed him. You know, I was with him when he made that statement, and he knew darn well that he didn't do what he did because of his family. So it was a very easy cop-out.
And yet, if he had done it for his family, who could blame him? Because we always have to do what's most important to us.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I think, Dave, you're saying that you don't think he was actually truthful about that because he did want it.
He did want it, but, you know.
But wanting is not enough.
Yeah. His family was a bit dysfunctional, and it was not the perfect family. And, you know, if it had been a wonderful, you know, happy, all-American family, you could say, well, you know, he did it for his family, but the family didn't turn out, you know, that well.
Well, Al's family was sort of dysfunctional, too, but look at what he did.
That's right.
And I think, again, when you have these two men that ran a parallel course,
yes.
I really think you've done an outstanding job in producing the story from Ed's perspective and yet maintaining the integrity of all of the other flavors with Al Pacino and the various personalities that were in their lives. They're fascinating stories. Joan, with you being a screenwriter, when you were working on this book as a writer, how did you have to shift your thinking?
You know, prose is it's a very different thing to screenplay writing is very spare in the prose. It's all description, but it has to be very specific. And writing a book, I mean, it's a luxury, really, because you get to enrich it with all kinds of things. And then I had Ed's life, of course, and Al's life. So it was a more demanding, but actually a more satisfying form to work in because of that, the richness of it.
Now, do both of you have a website so people can go to your website to find out more about this wonderful book? I know it's in bookstores all over the country.
Oh, yes. The website is www.whenineknewal.
The title of the book, When I Knew Al. So you can go in there and you can find out all kinds of wonderful things. My guests today have been David Sheldon and Joan McCall. We've got about... Oh, I'd say about 45 seconds before we're going to be finished with our chat. Do you have a message that you'd like to leave with my listeners relative to Al Pacino and Ed DeLeo?
The message that I would leave is don't wait until it is too late. We try to point out in our book what one man did to achieve amazing success and what a close friend of his did who had the same talent. What happened to him? Where did he go wrong?
And my message is, follow your bliss.
Follow your bliss.
Yes.
Well, you are both excellent writers. The book, When I Knew Al, The Untold Story of Al Pacino, is gripping. It gives you insights into two different people who had parallel lives.
The book is available at most bookstores. You know, it can be ordered online at Amazon.com, but almost every bookstore has the book.
And his photograph, Al Pacino's photograph, is right on the cover. Dynamic, dynamic photo. It's just wonderful. Thank you very much for being my guest today.
Thank you, Donna.
Thank you, Donna. It was fun.
It was just delightful having you. This is Donna Sebo. I'm in Fairbanks, Alaska. Have got more good things to share with you. And we're going to be taking a break. In just a moment here, don't go away. Phone lines will be open afterwards. Have a wonderful day, both of you. The guests, David Sheldon and Joan McCall, When I Knew Al, The Untold Story of Al Pacino. We'll be right back. Donna Sebo will be right back. Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and yes, I am broadcasting from Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm up here on a trip, and I'm going to be here for a couple of days. So due to the marvels of technology and the earnest effort of Don, who is engineering all of this stuff behind the scenes, without him, it wouldn't be possible. I am able to share a lot of things with you. Now, again, quickly, I just want to repeat the website, whenineweal.com. I think you'll find it fascinating and interesting. David, Sheldon, and Joan McCall. Well, telephone lines are now open. Yes, no matter where we are, anywhere in the world, you're still going to be able to call in on our toll-free numbers, 877-876-5227 if you're in the U.S., or 888-810-8322, and that's for Canada. And we have a direct line of 530-876-9146. And I do want to remind you, I'm here in Alaska in Fairbanks for a couple of days, and then I'll be down in Anchorage. And so if there's any of you that are listening from the magnificent state of Alaska and you want to connect with me for individual meetings, private consultations, I can be reached. And just call my 800 number at my office, and I'll be returning the phone call. That's 800-872-8852. But meanwhile, you can call me, and then I'll be in New York next week. So, yes, this is the traveling microphone for the next couple of weeks. I have so many things I want to share with you that I've come across. I want to say that there is a little poem by Louisa, sounds a little bit paisano, right? Louisa Goddessart McQuillan. And it's just a little short poem about summer, and I'm up here in Fairbanks where the sun and blue skies are just beaming with all their might, and everybody's running around in short sleeves shirts because it's an Indian summer, and it's absolutely gorgeous. The trees still have some color in them. And these are the final days of summer, and this is what Louisa said. She said, when the final days of summer bend the berries on the vine, we look forward to the harvest at the end of summertime. Here in the far north, all the berries are pretty much gone. You don't have anything available. But down in the Pacific Northwest, there's still blackberries out, and people are still out there picking them on the bushes. But boy, with the changes in the temperature and the cooler temps coming in, they are going to be disappearing pretty quickly. So it is the end of summer. It is time to sort of savor these cooler nights that are coming in. It's time to get out those old sweaters and your cozy, comfortable clothes as the temperatures start to change. Now, if you're in Hawaii, you could care less. But if you're in the far north like I am, that is a part of our living reality. Those temps do change. Speaking of that kind of a reality, I have a wonderful recipe, if I have time enough this afternoon, that I'm going to be sharing with you. But if you'd like to call in and chat with me, and for those of you listening to the broadcast for the first time, I am a psychic, I'm an intuitive, and I'm happy to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. And all you need to do is call in to 877-876-5227 in the U.S. or in Canada. You can dial us toll-free at 888-810-8322. And all I need is your first name or your initial. That's all. And then I'm happy to tell you what I perceive about you. And I had somebody questioning me about that the other day. They said, how do you do that? How do you pick up information on people? Well, it's a mental discipline. Yes, it's a mental discipline that enables me, and I've worked with it for a lot of years, and believe you, me, you never get to a point where you know it all. You don't ever do. But it allows me to perhaps give you some insights and perspectives about yourself, where you are, what you might be able to accomplish or do. And again, let me do my stuff, and then you're welcome to ask any kind of question. You know, right now, because we are in the fall time of the year, this is an opportunity. If you love to garden, I know you're getting your gardens all ready for the colder temps. Here in the far north, people are taking care of things, and oh, the flowers up here are just absolutely awesome. Everything in Alaska grows 10 times bigger than any place else. It's just incredible. They haven't had really cold, cold frosts that would kill off the flowers. So what they are right now, they're as big as dinner plates. I've seen dahlias that are just absolutely huge. And, of course, everything, like I said, just grows so much bigger than it does down in the lower 48. So if you are in a part of the country where those temps are beginning to change, starting to rain, it's getting colder. Up here, they've had their first freeze, but it wasn't a hard one. It was just a very mild one. Well, maybe you would like to be able to bring flowers inside your house. And I want to say it in a different way. How can you do it? You can do it with bulbs. Now, if you would like to force daffodil, tulip, or crocus bulbs at this time, then during the winter, you're going to have absolutely gorgeous blossoms. Hard to believe, isn't it? Well, I found out some information that I'll pass along to you right now because this is so easy. All you have to do is plant bulbs in a pot, moisten the soil, and place the pot covered with plastic in a cool place. Now, you want to keep the soil damp. And in 10 to 14 weeks, you're going to start seeing little green shoots peeking out of the dirt. Now, when they're about an inch tall, you want to move the pot to a warmer spot, and in a few days to an even warmer place. And then you want to wait a little bit longer and then put the pot in a spot with a temperature that's going to be, even during the winter months, about 60 degrees. And do you know what? You will have blooms during winter. And I didn't know, that wasn't something that I really was interested in. But my husband, who loves tulips and he loves lilies, when he went and put the bulbs out in our yard, he decided he wanted to make a pot and have lilies growing in the house. Now, he didn't do it this early. He did it in the beginning of the year. And by golly, we had the most beautiful lilies in our dining room. And they were so tall, and they bloomed long before anything outside bloomed. And they were just a delight. And he's planning on doing the same thing. It was the first time he'd ever had them in the house and let them do what they were doing. So this is something that if you love flowers, you can have them all year round, really. Now, if you would like to have a colorful display, you want to be sure that you water regularly. Please don't overwater. Don't flood them. They don't need it. Most of the forcing failures result from poor root systems due to inconsistent watering. And you want to pick those bulbs that do well when you want to force them to bloom. And the ones that do well, well, there are what they call the trumpet daffodils. There are the Mount Hood daffodils. They're white. And then there's also parrot tulips and crocuses. There's purple crocus, all kinds. Now, what you can do is go to a website. It's called johnnyseeds.com, J-O-H-N-N-Y, seeds, SEEDS.com. And you can find there all kinds of information about using particular bulbs that you can plant at this time in pots and then go through this progression and you'll have beautiful blooms for winter. Absolutely wonderful. And I think that is just terrific. We all enjoy flowers. We all do. And they just brighten up everything around us. Fresh flowers just have a magic all of their own. Now, speaking of fragrances and flowers, well, if that is not your cup of tea, putting something into a pot and doing what you need to do, if you don't feel like you've got a green thumb, and you'd still like to have a lovely environment around yourself, well, why not use the fragrance of lavender? Maybe a pinch of lemon? How about an apple fragrance? Well, cleaning products now are using, and some of them have been doing this for a long time, they're starting to add these fragrances to their cleaning products because the manufacturers have discovered that aromas make us feel more energized, calm, or sensual as we're tackling chores. Of course, that's nothing new. They've been doing research on that for a long time. And the trend, which started with certain high-end organic cleaners, is now going very much mainstream. And you'll find, you know, soaps for your dishes that have lavender in it. You'll have all kinds of apple, mango, tangle laundry detergent. Isn't that a wild one? And how about a mint refresh? Well, you can let this awareness of how manufacturers are bringing these scents into their products, you can do something with aromatherapy that can also assist you. Myself, I love the smell of vanilla. To me, it is very, very calming, and it's just, if you're stressed, it just does something nice. This sort of wraps around you. And if you're feeling sort of down in the dumps, if you add sweet orange or bergamot to massage oil, it helps to balance mood swings. Excuse me. And if you're feeling sort of droopy in the afternoon, goodness, we all go through that, then all you need to do is have a little bit of lemon or peppermint to wake up your system. Maybe a little peppermint tea, maybe a spray, or having something with a, like a candle. Maybe you're in an office and you can't use a candle, so maybe you just have some kind of an oil that you're able to use, and it will make a difference. They found that if people have a tendency of overeating, if they try a bath with drops of grapefruit oil, it stops the binge right in its tracks. Don't ask me why. I don't know, but that's what they've said. And there's just so many things that you can use. See if they want to explore aromatherapy. And maybe I'm going to have a guest on, too, in the future that will be discussing this at a little bit with a little bit more information. And you know what? Rosemary oil on your scalp, they say, will calm your mind. Sometimes if you can just take herbs and you can just rub them between your hands, it's wonderful. And I'll tell you, in tea, if you have any fresh mint, don't plant it in your flower beds. It'll take over everything. What you do is get a pot and grow mint in that pot and then snip the leaves off and add it to a cup of hot tea. Oh, it's very refreshing. We've done that for many, many years, and it just makes such a difference. It's just utterly refreshing. Well, if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, give me a buzz. Telephone lines are open at 877-876-5227, and that's for those of you in the U.S., or toll-free 888-810-8322 if you're in Canada. And we also have a direct line of 530-876-9146. Now, we're going to be taking a break for just a moment. Donna Sebo here. I'm broadcasting to you from Fairbanks, Alaska. I want to let you know that, tomorrow we're going to be talking about the 7-minute difference. Allison Lewis is the lady that's going to be sharing her wisdom with us. And then tomorrow there's going to be a Best of Donna program, or Wednesday, excuse me. And then on Thursday we're going to be talking about Peace of Mind Investor. If money's your gig, by golly, you're going to want to listen to Andy Raub. And then Dreamcraft, Paul Leversk. He is going to be giving us some real good insights on how to make our dreams become a reality. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break for just a moment. And when we come back, if you'd like to chat, I'm here for you. And I'll have more good things to share. Don't go away. Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and this broadcast is coming to you from Fairbanks, Alaska. Yes, and it's absolutely gorgeous up here. I want to say to any of you, if you have a chance to come to Alaska, you must do it. It is one of the most gorgeous places on the face of the earth, all year round. There's just wonderful things to see. Now, I also want to take the time to thank those of you who are sending me stories via email. I received one that I'm going to be sharing with you in just a moment. It really means a lot to me. I review the material that is sent to me and typically will respond when I'm on the road traveling. Obviously, I'm not going to be able to get back to you right away. So if you send me an email with a special recipe or a special story or information that you think I might be able to use on the show, just be patient with me and I will get back to you as quickly as I can. This particular message came from Rose Marie, and it is talking about an event during the OSU versus Penn State game that's occurring on the 23rd of this month. And what it is all about is raising the awareness for the need for more spinal cord injury research, as well as the work that OSU has done in research and rehabilitation. September, if you were not aware of it, is National Spinal Cord Injury Awareness Month. Now, Penn State and Ohio State University are getting on the football field on September 23rd, but there's something very significant that's going on during the game. These two schools have come together as one to try to bring a message across to people in segments between quarters, and that's about spinal cord injury. Now, it's a very real danger in football, and players that are injured are often sent off to heal as best as they can, never being heard from again. Of course, we're very much familiar with Christopher Reeve, the famous actor, and he went very public regarding the devastating nature of this injury. And those of us that had the opportunity to see him, listen to him, hear his message, were very impressed. And there are three people who have been felled by spinal cord injury who are going to bring the attention to this kind of injury during the National Spinal Cord Injury Awareness Month, which is, again, this month of September. Adam Taliaferro, which is a Penn State player, he was injured 6 years ago during the last minute of Penn State versus OSU game in Columbus and was immediately treated for his injuries at their medical center. Another is Tyson Gentry, who was an OSU punter receiver injured just 5 months ago. And then there's Rosemarie Rossetti, who I have had the opportunity to interview on my shows. She's a wonderful, wonderful lady. She was voted Miss Wheelchair of Ohio in 2004. She was injured by a falling tree while riding her bicycle 8 years ago. She also received rehabilitation treatment for her injury at OSU and started a spinal cord injury research fund. Now, Rosemary travels all over the country speaking to audiences, you know, about inspiration, persistence, and goal setting. And boy, she's a good one to do it. She is just a dynamic lady. And even though she was so severely injured, she has taken her life back. And when she was speaking at one particular location, one of the members of her audience happened to be one of the players that was injured, Tyson, the one that I mentioned just a moment ago. She said when she spoke and he was in the audience, it was 8 months before he was injured. And she mentioned Taliaferro's injury during the presentation, and she had each member of the audience write a personalized greeting card to the newly injured patient at the OSU Todd Hall Rehabilitation Center. Now, Gentry's card was brought to him when he was in intensive care, and on the card, Gentry had written, "Never give up no matter how much adversity you face. You can always overcome and beat adversity. A lot of people believe in you." After receiving his card, Gentry said, "When I saw the card, it was kind of weird and neat and surreal experience. You never know what can happen. God throws things at you, and you have to roll with the punches." Tyson takes strength in the fact that Adam, with a similar injury, is now walking thanks to the treatment he received at Dodd Hall. So you never know when a message is going to be able to reach someone. And Rosemary, I want to thank you. That's Rosemary Rossetti. And you can find her at her website, Rosemary Speaks, and that's R-O-S-E-M-A-R-I-E, Speaks. When people go through adversities in life, when they go through these situations, they often find out the depth of who they are as people. When they can dip into themselves and pull out strength, character, perseverance, and an awareness that they really have something to give as a gift to life by being really the best that they can be, regardless of what has been handed to them. They truly are an inspiration, and Rosemary is one of them. And so I want to acknowledge that. And for those of you that may have members of family or you've known of people that have been injured, September is the National Spinal Cord Injury Awareness Month. So wherever you are in the country, I don't care what football team you have an allegiance to, remember that there are those people that will be injured. And when we can support and can help them in every way we can to show them that they do have value, that they've been injured, but their life can go on. And the dedicated medical people that really are behind trying to help people get well, this is something that's very special. So, again, thank you very much, Rosemary. And if you have something you'd like to send along to me, send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna at DelphiInternational.com. Also, those of us at BBSRadio.com, we like hearing what you think about our shows, what you think about the interviews, the things that we're presenting to you on the Donna Sebo Show. So there's a comment area on the BBSRadio.com site. Go in there and let us know what you think. It makes a difference. And the staff and those of us who are the hosts here really appreciate hearing from you. And, of course, you can always contact me if you want. If you want to by phone, 800-872-8852. Don't forget, you can go up on my website, read my newsletters, find out about all kinds of things. Oh, and there's one button when you go to my main page I want you to press, and that's the one on glyconutrients. Very good information. So go and just peruse through my website. I invite you to do that. Donna Sebo here. My goodness, we are out of time. That's so hard to believe. I'm so pleased to have had my guests, David Sheldon and Joan McCall, talking about Al Pacino and their other story, the other side of the coin that so often we don't hear about, a man who had big dreams, who was not able to make his dreams come true in the way he wanted, Ed DeLeo, the book When I Knew Al. Captivating material. I know you'd enjoy it. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a great one. Talk to you tomorrow. And we'll be talking about 7 minutes can make a difference. Bye for now.